Okay, Bereishis chapter 14. This chapter is a chapter of story of a war. There's very few war stories in Sefer Bereishis, and definitely not at length, but it does seem to be an important part of the human experience, of humanity. Having wars is not something that we can take out of the story of reality. And Sefer Bereishis, who is a story of the most basic establishments out. We discussed nature and culture, and now the specific nature and the specific culture of this family, starting with Avraham Avinu, has to have some stories of wars, and it has to also express the virtues and the stories, the virtues of Avraham and the protection of God to Avraham in the context of wars. Of course, we have later the big stories of wars are maybe Paro Yetzias Mitzrayim, maybe the wars of Moshe later in the end of the story of the Midbar, the wars of Yeshia. These are the famous wars, but there is, for everything, there is a precedent in the story of the Oves. And Avraham Avinu had this major war, and probably important to talk about what it was. So what we have in the story is, we could say maybe three or four important parts. I'm going to just divide it into four parts and talk about each. And this is interesting because, like I said, there's few war stories, and especially in Sefer Bereishis. And we generally, when we think about Avraham Avinu, we don't generally think of him as a warrior, but it's very pretty clear from this story that he was at least also a warrior. So the story divides into, number one, the like setting, the frame of who were the sides of this war, where the war was, and so on. That's the first part of the story. It has the story of a specific battle in this war, maybe the main battle. We'll see that there were many side battles or side stories in the war. And this, you could call it the expedition of Kedar La'omer and Amraphel towards Sidon. But the main battle, which was with Sidon, we have the story and the story of who wins that battle. In other words, the Kedar La'omer Amraphel side wins. And then what happens, the result of this battle is, we assume that they lose. And losing a battle doesn't mean that everyone gets killed. What it mostly means is that the winning side takes everything from the losing side. That's what happens here. So that's the setting, stage two, story two. Story three is how Avram hears about this. And he hears about this because of something which was set up already in the previous chapter, right? Lot went to live in Sodom or next to Sodom. And therefore, he was also captured along with the capture of everyone and everything from Sodom. And Avram decides and realizes that he has to protect his nephew. And he goes into battle against this whole coalition of kings who have come to do battle with Sodom. And of course, the story is that Avram wins. He wins this battle. Again, that doesn't mean that he kills everyone. What it means is that they run away, that they therefore also lose their captives, their everything else that they took along from the war. And what happens, the next step, the fourth step of the story is, so of course, Avram saves Lot and he has everything now. And the fourth step, and another important step of the story, is how Avram and the king of Sodom sort of negotiate for the results. So Avram was this like outsider who sort of got himself involved into a war that wasn't his. The only reason he got involved was because of his, what's called here, his brother, or really his, we saw Lot was called his brother, but what it means is literally his brother's son, but he treated him as his brother, and it means his relative, who he takes seriously as a relative. And he goes to, how do you call it? He meets the king of Sodom. He also meets this priest, Malki Tzedek, the priest. A priest for El Elyon, a priest to Hashem, apparently, or can think about that when we talk about that part. And he gives him Maser, he gives him part of it. And then the rest, Avram gives back to the king of Sodom, although he might have deserved part of what was gained from the war. He doesn't take it. He only he gives it back. And he says the only payment or sort of like part he will take would be the part of the people that went with him. But he himself doesn't want to take everything. So these are the four parts of the story. Let's go through each of them and discuss a tiny bit of what they mean and what the story is. First thing we have to talk about is in general. This is, of course, as we said, a continuation of the previous story, which explicitly set up this story, or also some stories later about Sodom, but explicitly set up the story with Lot going to live in Sodom. And in some sense, we could see that as a continuation of the story, which we discussed, that we could see this whole thing as a continuation of the story of Dor HaFluga, where every family or every nation goes out and lives in their location, in their area. And now, Avram and Lot also choose their location, their place where they live. And what we see here in this story, in a certain sense, is that even though Avram and Lot split up, Avram still has some sort of, we could call it responsibility, or maybe some sort of sovereignty even, over this place called Sodom, or that area, Kikar Yarden, where Lot went to live. So he still gets involves himself in the war, which happened there, although it's not his place. And this seems to be something important about Avram, like he's someone who is involved all over. He's not someone that's limited to one place. Another thing in which this is important to notice, the connection between before, is the story of the connection between Avram and Lot, or the kind of relation that he has. And this seems important. I think this is trying to show a virtue of Avram. Avram is a person who protects his family, even this family who is he's sort of in a fight-not-fight with, as we discussed yesterday. There's some kind of split that happens between them, and even after that split, he still sees it as his duty to protect and even to endanger his life, obviously, to go to battle in order to save his brother. The saving of everything else is sort of incidental to that. And he like takes on this huge project of fighting, getting involved in a much larger war than just, not just Lot that got kidnapped, that got captured. It's the whole city of Sodom, all of their men, you can assume all of their women and children, however, what happens in wars. And Avram gets involved in all of this in order to save his brother. So those are the two ways in which this connects very much to the previous story. In some sense, one question that people, it's a very funny question, but if you actually read the stories, but the question that gets asked sometimes is that it doesn't say in the Torah, in Parshas Sefer Bereshit, it doesn't say why God loved Avram, it doesn't say why he chose him. It doesn't say explicitly that he chose him in this book. It's later in the Tanakh, we have Bechartab Avram and things like that. Obviously, God has some kind of special relationship with him in this story. It doesn't really say why, what Avram did so well. But if you actually read the story, you see many great actions and many great deeds that Avram did. And this is definitely one of them. This going to war in order to save his brother, that's one of them. Okay, so now the first part is the setup of the story. It has this setup, and this is the only story in Sefer Bereshit that set up this way. Vayhi b'mei, it wasn't happened in the days of. This is, of course, a kind of way of the Tanakh setting up stories, which we know from many other places. It's said not there's not. It feels a little bit out of place in this book, which is not like a book of stories of wars and kings. And in some sense, it's like giving us a different context, like Avram, the stories like about Avram, this man and his wife and his children later and so on. But here we have like a greater context where there's kings and so on. Now there's these four kings, Amraphel, the king of Shinar, Arioch, the king of Elusar, Kedorlaomer, the king of Elam, Siddal, the king of Goyim. Some of these places and names are familiar. Some of them are not. Shinar, we know where it is. We discussed the place Shinar. It's important from, that's where the story of the Migdal Bovel happened. Elusar, not a place that we know of. Elam is a place that was mentioned already. Goyim is a place that we don't know where it is, or not mentioned in other places. In any case, there's different theories about what these places are. Now, they have a war. They create Osir Melchome. They did battle. They did war with five kings. Five kings, and these five kings are all kings over places which we know where they are. They're all sort of five cities in the same place. Bera, the king of Sodom, Birsha, similar name, the king of Amora, Shinov, the king of Adma, Shemeva, the king of Tzvoim, and the king of Bela, who does not have a name, but that there's one other comment about his city. It says, Bela Hitzor, the city Bela is the one called Tzer, and possibly the name Tzer was given later, as we'll see later in the story of the overturning of Sodom. Now, we have the location of the battle, in other words, the most important battle of the war, which is in a place called Emek Asidim, which is now known as Yam HaMelech. And they give us the background for this story. These kings, apparently, these five kings, the location of Sodom, were Avdu, they served Kedorlaomer, specifically Kedorlaomer. And in the 13th year, or in the 13th year, which is probably the more literal reading, they have rebelled in him. And probably what this means is that they stopped paying their taxes. And in the 14th year, Kedorlaomer brought along this whole coalition with three other kings. Apparently Kedorlaomer was powerful, and these were like emperors. They, like we discussed in the story of the Nimrod, these were the first empires who were the king of one place, also had some sort of leadership over other places. And in general, what his leadership consists of was demands for taxes and things like that. So economic subjugation. And when Sodom has rebelled against them, then they come to fight with them. Now, since they're doing this great military expedition, and as seems to happen with many military expeditions, they don't actually start with their actual goal. They have many other goals, and this might be even a problem. We could think about in a second that maybe, how do you call it? That maybe this was something that they did bad and Avram did well, as we'll see in a second. But they go and they on the way, and if you follow the sort of the map of from where they come from Shinar all the way to Sodom, we could sort of see how this is sort of on the way. At least we have to know what the ancient ways were. Ways don't always go like in a straight line. There's wherever the highway went, and they do battle, and it says Vayaku, and they, in other words, they win in some sense. A whole list of people: Rephaim from Ashtes Kanaim, Zuzim in place called Ham, Aimim and Shevek Irsaim, Choiri in place called Seir, and it gives their whole until El Paran, and then they go back to En Mishpat, which is also called Kodesh, and they do make a battle. They hit, they smite people from some field of Amalek, and the Amori who lives in Chatzin Tomer. So a whole long list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least 7 random tribes or groups. Some of them, these also we are known from later that they lived in this area. Some of them seem to be out of time because Amalek maybe wasn't born yet, the one that we know, but apparently these were areas that were known already. And they have all of this. Now, finally, they arrive at their location, and that's the next part of the story, part two. And the king of Sodom and Amora and so on come out to do battle with them. So they sort of preempted them, apparently. They ambushed them or whatever when they knew they were coming, because obviously they did this whole long expedition. So there's a lot of news coming. And now, apparently, they lost. So this is interesting. It seems to be showing how weak the king of Sodom was, right? And his people, because usually the attacking side, obviously, if he saw them coming and he went out to attack them, he must have had some higher position of them. And even that, apparently, they did something wrong. And there's even a geographical detail here that the Emek HaSidim had these pits of clay or something like that. It's interesting that this piece seems to connect with the clay, the Bechemer, that we discussed also in the story of Dara Floga, where the Hachemer HaYalem Nachemer. In any case, and they lost, and losing means always they run away. So they ran away from the battle, which means they lost, and the king of Sodom and Amorah fell into these pits of lime or of clay, and the rest ran to the mountains, which are over there. And basically, that's another way of saying that Sodom lost the battle, and therefore, Kedorlaim and his people took all of the possessions of Sodom and Amorah, all their food, and just along with that, they took Lot and his possessions, who was living in Sodom. So Lot isn't explicitly like part of the Sodom system. He's not maybe a citizen of Sodom, but he was in that area. And as we saw, these kings are not very particular about who they're doing battle with. Once you're on a war expedition, you just conquer wherever you could. That seems to have been the assumption here. We know that much later, people always have this kind of thing happening. Now, we have the third part of the story, which is Avram hearing of this, right? Hapulit comes. Hapulit means someone who has escaped, someone who was saved from the battle, right? So when people run away, and then some of them die and some of them get saved, and one of the people that was saved comes to Avram, who is living now in Eloine Mamre HaMoiri. And now we get some details about who this Mamre was. We already saw it in the previous chapter. He is the brother of Eshkel and Unar. And again, brother not here does not necessarily mean literally brother. It could mean something like ally, like we saw with Avram and Lot. And it says explicitly they are allies, Bali Bris, right? People of a covenant. They've made a covenant. They made a treaty, right? In other words, they're allies with Avram. And so Avram, obviously, what an ally means is they have some kind of defense pact. So they're going to go along with Avram to fight when he wants to fight. So Avram hears from this pilot that his brother, his nephew, was captured. So he takes along, he arms his Chanicha Vilide Baisa. He has 318 of his own men. That's really what it means. Born in his house, which seems to mean slaves. And apparently also with his Baalei Bris, go along with him, might be the same 318 or connected with them, and he chases them until Dan, which is in the north. So he chases, this is like the way back of the kings, if you follow again the ancient highways, and he splits onto them, which means that he creates some kind of ambush, this is talking about some kind of strategy that he did in the night. He splits into two groups and sort of surrounds them or something, and chases them back even further north to a place called Chove, which is the left, or maybe another way of saying, not sure what to the left means, of Damascus, which again is Damascus, we know where that is. And then, so that's another way of saying, so Avram turns the tides of the battle. They're, of course, they're ready, like sort of on the way home, and on their way home, he chases them further away, and then, therefore, he redeems, or he takes back all of the possessions of Sodom, and Lot, and the women, and the the people, everything that they've captured, Avram now has. Now he returns back to Sodom. That's the next part of the story, part four of the story. He returns back and comes to another place. And this whole story is full of these geographical places with have two names, all them have two names, which usually means like it was first called one name and later another name. So the pasuk is telling you that you should know exactly where it was. Some place called Emek Shoveh, not Emek Hasidim, which we had before. Emek Shoveh, which is also known as Emek HaMelech, maybe because of this, maybe this Melech is some other Melech. There's a question about this. And here there's the story of Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem, the king of Shalem, who was a priest and a king. And though in those days, this was not two different jobs. The king might be a priest also. And he brings out bread and wine. This seems to have been some kind of accepted gesture, like a ritualized gesture. They bring the conqueror. It means, in some sense, it means he's recognizing Avram as the legitimate ruler or something here. In other sense, it means that he's in peace with him. Apparently, that's the kind of thought. And he gives Avram a blessing since he's a priest. We know that from much later, one of the main jobs of priests is to give blessings. And he gives Avram a blessing. Baruch Avram le'elelin koinesh ma'am v'oret. This is important for theology, and we're not going to get into the whole theology here, but this is a very important pasuk for theology, because this is probably the first time, and maybe and one of the only times in these stories, where it gives a description of who God is. And there's this word El Elyon. Of course, there's some people that claim that El Elyon is not the God, it's the name of a Canaanite God. In any case, we're assuming that it means the highest God. Koinesh Ma'avuretz, who owns, who created heaven and earth. And this is one of the only places in Sefer Bereishis, and almost the only place in the whole Torah, where the description of God is the one who controls, owns, created, however you exactly will translate Koinesh, heaven and earth. Later we have Al-Havram and things, very particular things, but here there's the most general thing, and it's obviously the most general thing because Avram has nothing to do with this Malkut Tzedek besides for this general thing. And he says, this God, and blessed is this God has given you your enemies in your hands. That's his blessing to Avram. And Avram, in response to his blessing, and apparently this is how priesthood works, he gives you the blessing and you give him money or masses. He gives him masses, he gives him a tenth of everything, in other words, of all of his possessions that he just conquered, he gives him part, and that's what is what he belongs to him as a priest. So that's the conversation, the dialogue between Avram and Malki Tzedek. And then there's a dialogue to Avram and the king of Sodom. Now the king of Sodom comes to Avram and he proposes a deal. He says, look, his deal is a little weird because it's not clear that he has any right to anything, because now Avram has saved him, maybe everything belongs to him. It seems like, on the other hand, maybe he did, after Avram started winning, probably he helped him also. It doesn't say these things clearly. She says, let's make a deal. You give me the nefesh, in other words, the living things, the men, the women, the children, the slaves apparently, v'rechosh, and the other possessions you could take, so the animals, the whichever other possessions they had. And Avram refuses the deal, and he offers an even more generous deal. He says, and he offers it also in a theological way, he swears to God. He says, "Arimoyis yodi al Hashem el Elyon." This is where it's interesting that Avram changes the language slightly. The Malki Tzedek said just el Elyon. Avram says yitkevufka el Elyon, kenesh ma'an v'oretz, and I swear. And this poetic language, imichutz v'atzrechnal, from a string to the tying of the string of ties a shoe, I will, if I take anything from you, right? If I will, that's a language of swear. Something will happen to me. God will punish me if I will take anything from you. So Avram not only doesn't take him up on his offer to like split half and half, he swears. This is like another way of saying like a neder, right, or a cherem, like when you dedicate something to God, you promise in the name of God, or you promise to God that you will not take from this. And Avram says, gives a reason, which is an interesting reason to think of it. Don't say that I have made Avram rich. And this must be an important, I think, for the whole story, because of course the beginning of all these stories, and all these stories are somewhat to show the fulfillment of the promise that God promised Avram, that he will be rich and great and everyone will recognize Avarcham Varchecha. But it seems like there's a correct way of how he should become rich, and Avram doesn't want to become rich sort of at the expense of these Sodom people that he has rescued. He wants them to be in a nicer way. That's how I would say it. You have to read it nicely, right? He's not saying, you shouldn't be the one. Why shouldn't? Not because he's bad. There's such readings, but probably we should not. But Avram says, that's for me, that's for my side. But what the men have eaten, the Hanorim, which means his Hanichav Lida Baiser, right, his soldiers, and the other men who went with him, Oner Eshkele Mamre, who are his allies, they will take their parts from the what was taken in the war. But Avram gives up his part. Of course, we can't. He can't. He can't be nice on the part of the others. Their party, they're the legitimate theirs. They're going to get it, but his party doesn't want to take it all. And that's the end of this chapter.